Flatulate. What are you, a little gassy tonight?
Flatulate. Want to hear a funny fart story? It's so it still makes me laugh to this day.
Do I want to hear a funny fart story? Yes. The answer is yes, because farts are always funny. So please go on. Yes.
When I used to DJ at Niagara, which if you don't know the venue, is a very popular East Village club bar. Yeah, whatever.
Super punk. Shout out Jesse Malin.
In terms of the owners and the origins, very, very awesome, authentic. It's become so popular now that it's kind of like, you know, it's just another popular venue. It's still got a lot of cred. Anyway, I won't get into that. But I used to DJ on like Friday nights.
That's a good slot. Big time DJ.
Yeah, 11 to 4. And on the way there, I would often stop at there was a deli down the road that had like a lot of health food, and I would just get like, I don't know, like I would get like a vegan, you know, sandwich and stuff. Just because they were good. They had good vegan sandwiches, and I knew I was going to have an unhealthy night. But anyway, it would sometimes, but not always, it wasn't a given, but maybe it was whatever I'd had for lunch. It would sometimes give me like really awful farts. And there was one night where like I was farting and it was so, the smell was so horrible that I was like laughing to myself. I'm sitting there like teaching, like, oh my God, that's so horrible.
Like, how is this coming out of me?
And I see the doorman, Charlie, he's like, and the club, this is early, you know, it's like midnight. And like the venues, it's like, I don't know, it's like half full, maybe a third full. Like the place used to rage to the point where you couldn't walk through it, and it wasn't there yet. But I see like Charlie kind of like pushing through the crowd, and he's got the door pried open with a chair, and he's like, man, he goes, somebody keeps fucking like gas in the place, and it's just horrible. I had to prop the door open. I was like, start laughing. So it's me, dude.
Oh boy.
Just wrecking the pickup vibe.
Take the paint off walls.
It really was horrible. It was amazing.
Are you now, when you're DJing 11 to 4 at Niagara in those days, like, you're high on cocaine? Like, are you doing drugs in these days?
No.
Are you saying no just because your kids might listen to this?
No, I've never been a coke guy.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, in those days, this is pre-kids. I mean, I did DJ for a couple of years after my daughter was born, but for the most part, this is pre-kids, and those were my hours. I mean, the reason I got the gig in the first place was because one of the owners, my wife was bartending there, and then one of the owners is like, Brad, you're here every Friday anyways. We need a DJ. Why don't you DJ?
And they said, prerequisite. Your fucking asshole has to stink so bad you can clear the room.
I think when he asked me, I was already kind of, I had done some DJing at other venues, but I hadn't really considered it just because, I mean, the Niagara gig was, you know, more of like a real, like, it was like a juke, you know, you're like a living jukebox, essentially.
right.
I mean, you could get a little bit creative, but, you know, you had to keep the party going.
Got to keep the Clash songs coming. Wow. Well, Brad. Mm. This was fun having Dave Knudsen. I can't believe I've been saying Dave Knudsen for 20 years.
That's what you would think, though.
Yeah, KN. I don't know. So I have a long, long relationship with his groups. You know, Botch, I was really just a fan of. You know, we talked about it in the interview. Funniest thing that happened with Botch was one of my best friends, Chris Ross, who was the promoter at the Melody Bar in New Brunswick, he also happened to live a block away from me in Highland Park. I was very young, very poor. Chris's house was like my sanctuary, and he was like a steady piece of my life. And Botch stayed at his house, and the following morning, we took them to a little local diner called Penny's, had a great time. And I've always just been this giant Botch fan. I had a car, a mid-90s Corolla that I had I drove the thing into the ground for over 10 years. And I kept this thing going so long. You know, I married into a car family. Mm. They know cars.
Okay.
And I showed up into the mix with this like 15-year-old Corolla, half aftermarket parts, like literally like things put on with zip ties all over the place. But since they were car people, they're like, you know what? I respect you. Like, I respect that you tried, you know? And, but, you know, I was already dating, you know, my now wife, and the car broke down a couple times when I was on tour. I was being stubborn. I didn't want to get rid of it. The car gets randomly one night, someone throws paint thinner on the side of the fucking car.
Oh.
And in the middle of Jersey, no other car's got it. Just this old piece of shit Corolla. Yeah. I have no idea why. And I'm like, all right, this is an inside job. This is my wife's family going out at night. They want me to get a new car, so they did this, you know? But anyway, long story short, I had one sticker on this car. It was a Botch sticker.
Nice.
It was the old school Botch sticker on the back windshield with the rodeo cowboy on it. And just a little circle sticker. And I love this car so much, people were telling me to junk it. I was like, no, won't junk it. I literally took this door off, brought it to my father-in-law's shop, buffed it out, and painted the fucking door so I could sell the thing for $500. It had over 200,000 miles on it, still sold it for $500.
Yeah.
I was like, it must live. And maybe like 3 or 4 months later, I'm driving in Jersey City. I'm stopped at a light. I see an old Corolla. It kind of looks like mine. And I look close. What do I see but the Botch sticker?
Yes.
I'm like, she lives. She lives. And it's just this little Mexican lady driving the car. No idea how she got it. And the Botch sticker lives. It's on there. The car must have like 300,000 miles by that time.
That's heartwarming.
So it was so nice,
that's
right?
That's a great
story.
That
it kept the car. But, you know, then, you know, many years pass, and I think it's like 05 or 06, and I'm in a very, like, it's literally just when Gaslight's getting going. We might not have even been Gaslight Anthem that long, and we had a three-song CD that we were pushing around, a demo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up on a tour. I think it was a Shirts for the Cure tour with Thursday, Minus the Bear, Me Without You, and my friend's band, We're All Broken, were opening. And at those days, I would have done anything to get the fuck out of the house and go on the road. So I did merch for my friends, We're All Broken, the entire time. And, you know, got pretty familiar with the Minus the Bear guys and the music, and their merch guy, Travis, who became a good friend of mine, who's sadly no longer with us. And I just had this like beautiful experience seeing Minus the Bear every night. And I still get my balls broken by everybody on that tour, because apparently I was just obnoxiously pushing Gaslight demos to everyone. like every single band, every member of crew. Like, I was just like, here's my band. Check it out. You know, being like super obnoxious and over the top. And what's funny about that is, like, shortly after, maybe even during that exact time, Alex and I from Gaslight were really into Minus the Bear. And, you know, if you listen to some of our early songs, like when I'm running some like straight patterns on the kick and kind of doing four in the floor, when Alex is doing some finger tapping on his guitar, like it's semi-influenced by Minus the Bear. They were a big, you know, I think a lot of, I bring up this story because I think if anyone's listening as a Gaslight fan, they'd probably be surprised to hear that Minus the Bear was a big influence on us, and it definitely was.
Nice.
Very, very important band to me. I'm sorry that Corey couldn't be here. Corey Murchie, the bass player, was originally supposed to be on the call, and he couldn't get on. But he is a sweet and excellent person as well. And if anybody has the time, you should look up his paintings, which are beautiful. And he does really, really great work. And he also works at an amazing farm called Los Golondrinas in Arizona. Or I'm sorry, in New Mexico, like south of Santa Fe. And it's like a living museum on a 200-acre rural farming valley. So he's really doing some really interesting stuff I was hoping to pick his brain about. So, Corey, I miss you. I hope you're well, and I wish you could have been here.
We'll get you on your own show.
Yeah, we'll get you. Yeah, that's, you know what?
Boom.
You know what Corey might be good for, and we got it coming up soon?
What's that?
You might have to do a new Optimist Club episode.
Oh.
Corey would be a good one for that.
Okay.
He'd be a good one for that. Why are you laughing? Now I definitely do.
I love it. I love it. I love the Optimist Club.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All those stories, yeah, are said, and now we should listen to this interview. It's going on track.
And we are rolling.
All right,
that's it.
So fancy,
yeah, Brad. Brad, go ahead and do your fancy intro now with your cool, with like your Jimmy Kimmel voice.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Going Off Track Podcast, starring Benjamin Horowitz.
That's not my stage name. Not my stage name.
What's your stage name? Wait, I fucked it up. It's with your host, Benjamin Horowitz, a.k.a.
Dr. Glossy Feather Sex. So I did, you know, I actually used to write, I don't know if you remember this, a long time ago, you used to be able to put your actual name into this website and it generated your Wu-Tang Clan name.
Oh yeah. And your porn name, right?
Well, yeah. Porn name is just that mathematical formula with the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
I remember the Wu-Tang one too.
Yeah. Wu-Tang generator. And mine was Continental Sugar Boogie. I'll always remember that. Good name, right? So if you ever need a go-to giving me an intro here, Brad, you know, it's just default to Continental Sugar Boogie, okay?
Okay, Conti.
No, the porn name is, it's your first pet and your mother's maiden name.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Wasn't one of them like the street you lived on?
That's another one. That's your middle name and the street you grew up on. There's two. Dave, can I play this game with you? Who?
I'd love to. I've only heard this with the street.
Yeah, and, so give me your first pet and your mom's maiden name.
Well, the first pet was my sister's rabbit and the name was Bon Bon.
Oh, good start.
And then my mom's middle name is Texie.
Oh my God.
So it would be Bon Bon Texie. But if you do the street name,
right,
that's better because then it would be Bon Bon Ruby.
Oh my goodness, Dave. These are some of the best I've heard.
So I don't know.
Born for it. What's yours, Brad?
Wait, it's
for, give me, all right, here's the two. Give me
which
first
formula
pet,
are we doing?
First pet
and mom's middle name.
Maiden name.
Oh, I'm not going to say that. That's like a security question.
Oh, pfft. Okay. Let's go middle name then. I like that.
It's pet and social security number.
First pet. Wait, I'm trying to think. We had like three dogs before I was like years old.
And I'm imagining from where you're from, you had probably like a pet worm,
spider. I'm going to go with... So I think my first dog's name was Bark. I'm not kidding. I named the dog and I was like 2 years old.
Wow, you're already at the.
But then my mom's middle name is
peak
K.
Of ingenuity all the way back
Bar-K.
Then.
Bar-K.
Okay, Bar-K. That's pretty good. And then what's the street you grew up on and middle name? So middle name and street you grew up on.
Wait, whose middle name?
Yours.
Brad Mountain.
Man, these are good. These are really better than I thought. This is usually disappointing. So. Well, welcome to the show. Brad Mountain is here with
your co-host and producer, Brad Mountain. Yeah.
So, hi, Dave. How's it going?
It's going well.
Yeah. How's family life out in Seattle? You doing good? What's your what's your day-to-day like these days?
Family life is good. I mean, got the almost 10-year-old back in school, so that's the most exciting part because, nice, you know, no one wants me as a teacher because that's just a big failure right there. So
was that a lot of last year for you, was attempting to be a teacher?
Yeah, I mean, it was more just like hovering. Well, not even hovering, just like checking in every 10 minutes or 20 right. minutes. What are you doing?
Right.
Are you watching Fortnite YouTube videos instead of doing your Microsoft Teams call? Like,
right.
Can you stop listening to Juice WRLD while your teacher is talking?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I'm going to go to you for my contemporary references now. You see my point. This is good.
Oh, man. It's the only reason I know any of this stuff about pop music is because my son is just all over my Spotify account. So
I love that. You know. That's I got like an Imagine Dragons tune up at the top of my playlist these days. It's not for me. Not for me.
Yeah. So, it's all Kid Laroi and Justin Bieber and Juice WRLD these days. But you know, what are you gonna do?
You gotta roll with it, right? No one likes an ugly, self righous old man, you know? You gotta pretend to be into it almost, right?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I'm guessing his music taste will change, but, you know, it's at least cool that he's into music, so.
Do you have that thing, you know, since you're a musician, this is your son?
Yeah, yeah.
Does your son, like, kind of try to, like, pander to that? Like, oh, my dad's a musician, so I'm going to play him this cool new thing. I want to impress him. Or are you just, like, dorky dad and he doesn't care?
Well, it's kind of both. Like, I don't know that he totally understands. I mean, I guess now he does understand like the music aspect of my life and what I've been doing with my life. But a lot of times it's kind of like, you know, there was a long time of like, why don't you have a real job? Like all my other, you know, like, what are you doing? Yeah. You have the studio in your, you know, in the basement, but like, what do you do all day? Yeah. But he's really into like, he's got this drum pad machine app on his iPad. So now at this point, he's constantly like trying to like write little beats with it and then record them. And then he's like, Dad, listen to this. And I listen to it and it's pretty cool. I mean, it's all like whacked out and out of time and the samples are kind of janky, but but it's cool that he's doing it and he's got some like drive and motivation to make something that he likes. So
his samples are janky, right?
No. I'm like, dude, you should get a different pack for that. Like, man. You might want to get a different loop pack. You should ask me about loops, but
but tighten it up, huh?
Exactly, man. Like you gotta like work on your sounds and your production and you know.
What's the difference, like his entry into, you know, electronic music compared to your entry must be far different. I mean, even technology wise, like, you know, when you're coming out of Botch and getting into different kinds of music, like what were you first tinkering with, like sampling drums and doing samples on? Like what actual machine were you using?
Well, I mean, the only time I was really sampling stuff was just into like different guitar pedals, right?
Right.
I've only recently started, you know, over the last, since the band's over, started like really getting into like recording and, and doing production and stuff like that. I mean, when the band was going, I was just more focused on writing the songs and, you know, Alex was in the band and he was a huge studio nerd. So it was kind of like one of those things where, I know you can take care of like recording practices and making great demos and, you know, think about, you know, the logistics of the recordings and whatnot. I'll just be over here like writing parts and songs. And
yeah, you had like the in-house pro there.
Yeah, exactly. And so now that the band's over, it's like now I'm kind of like finding a lot of, I don't know, like fun just learning about that stuff and, you know, recording and kind of catching up for lost time in terms of my knowledge in that world. So
is it born of necessity because you're, you know, seems like this is the first time you're trying to really piece together things yourself outside of a band context? Or did you do that, you know, writing songs for, you know, Minus the Bear? Did you do it separately? Or is this the first time you're really taking a stab at it totally by yourself?
I mean, there were times when I did where I would demo songs, you know, somewhat poorly for the band and then bring them to the band and whatnot. But that was always just with the understanding that this was never going to be anything that people ever heard. It was just more to document the idea and kind of share it with people. But yeah, I mean, when the band ended, and I started working with my buddy, Sam Bell, who did the last MTB record, we started recording, some of my solo stuff or my new project. And that was, you know, we started in a studio and we were there and it was like, why are we here? It's just the two of us. Like, why are we running out this like awesome, right, you know, like studio where like a full band would be to record. Yeah, like we can just do this in your house. So then we, you know, built this studio in my house, and that was, it was somewhat out of necessity, but now I just find it like, I don't know, I find it like wildly creative to just come down here and be able to, you know, kind of like put down whatever is in my head. Like I think like a lot of guitar players, you always also are very, very interested in drums. And I kind of always wanted to be a drummer. And I know that'll never happen. But now at this point, I'm like, oh, well, I can just like program all the stuff that has been in my head for years.
Yeah.
So
it actually sounds pretty cool. Good these days.
So yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
So have you, there is the danger though that, you have this brilliant idea, you run into your studio and you grab your guitar and then you're like, wait a minute, maybe I'll put down a drum beat first to help inspire me. And then you start getting into the drums thing, and next thing you know, you've forgotten your riff.
Dude, totally. No, it's true. Like I try to, like write the guitar parts or the basis, you know, like the basic parts before I come down here, just cause I know that that's going to happen and it'll get sucked into like the production element of it. It was, that's, you know, I've been doing this for like a year and a half, like really in earnest recording down here. And my wife, and my kid left for like 3 or 4 days. And I was like, I'm just going to play guitar through an amp and I'm not going to record anything into a DAW until I have like stuff written. And it was amazing to kind of like, flip back to the old school way of doing it where it's just like sheer volume coming out of an amp as opposed to like out of like studio monitors where everything's like a little more safe and you know, like predictable sounding. So moving forward, it's going to be pretty fun to actually like kind of, I don't know, go jump back and forth between the two. And yeah, definitely be mindful of not like losing the initial idea in the software.
Yeah, the one thing that I've had home studios for years and years because I've been an engineer and whatnot. But the one thing that within the first couple of years I realized that I always had to do was have a mixer set up with like, you know, whatever, like usually maybe a keyboard, a synth, a guitar, my guitar amp maybe plugged into it. But just so that like I could instantly get sounds. Like for when you have that inspiration, instead of like booting up the computer, launching Pro Tools, making a new track, you know, that whole like fucking insanity. Also, I used to always keep like just like a digital recorder, like right next to the desk to just throw shit down on. Even, you know, even though I had the luxury of like massive Pro Tools studio in front of me.
Come on, that's what the iPhone is ideas. For.
Or the iPhone, yeah. This is.
I mean, I actually iPhone. Did that the other day. I was like watching football because when I'm watching football, I always have like a guitar in my hand.
Yeah.
And so I was like noodling around and I came up with something and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. So I just like have this super shitty little Epiphone battery powered amp and I just put my phone in front of it, recorded it. And then ended up just like throwing it in the Logic.
Yeah.
And that's the guitar sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah,
it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you can like fuck with it and tweak it a bit and then, you know, embellish it with other guitar tracks and whatnot. But like the core guitar sound is just my phone recording this shitty little amp in my living room.
Yeah. So. I had a handheld cassette recorder for years that finally shit the bed, but it was the same deal. Like I tried to keep it going because every now and then I'd get, you know, I'd like put an idea, especially like I have a Wurlitzer 200, you know, the electric piano.
Yeah.
And that thing into this little handheld cassette recorder used to sound amazing. And it was the same thing. Like I do like a riff on the Wurlitzer and record it on that cassette deck. And it just sounded so cool. Cause it had this like natural, like, shitty compression built into the cassette recorder.
Totally.
And like I made so many loops from just, you know, recording ideas and that I couldn't, yeah, then the vibe was so thick that I couldn't go back and, you know, re-record.
Well, then like sometimes, you know, recreating something like that is so difficult too, because you kind of like are attached to all the little mistakes and the nuances.
Oh, yeah,
And like you're saying, like the shitty compression or like the tone is like bad but so unique in like a cool way,
yeah,
that you know you could try for ages to get something that cool, but it just doesn't have the same vibe. I mean, it's kind of like the, you know, being, you know, in the band, you know, I think Ciccarelli, when we were doing Omni, kept talking about this because he would say like, you know, you guys just have too much demoitis, there's so much demoitis going on, because we like, for that record specifically, like we demoed the fuck out of those songs. And so a lot of times it was like, well, on the demo, we want to do this like on the demo. And, you know, he's like, well, then just fucking release the demo. So, I mean, sometimes you just like, the vibe is just so strong that's what you gotta use. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's got the juice, the magic.
Yeah.
It's funny you talk about that, especially in context with your son. Cause you know, from so many years of playing and the fact that you, you know, started playing kind of pre the boom of digital music, you know, you knew that you got to a point that you're like, all right, I need to plug into an amp. I need to hear it like this. I need to get these sounds and let it free. But someone like, you know, well, your son might know it because he knows you, but, you know, a different kid coming up through digital music, like, they might not even have any concept of that, right? Like they're coming up just hardwired into their programs from the start, programming from the start. And this idea of like a drum set in a live room or a guitar loud right. through a live amp, like they don't even know those sounds, do they?
No. And it's funny you say that, because like, you know, like through working on all these songs and like using virtual instruments and all this stuff, at some point, you know, like you're writing stuff and it's like, unless there's like a guitar that's kind of like fucked up or like some like weird mistakes or whatever, it's just like way too pure, or not pure, but it's like way too just like robotic, right? Like it doesn't feel like music to me unless mm-hmm. there's something like raw or natural,
right?
You know, like with natural playing to it, you know, like obviously, you know, you can go through and not have everything quantized and all that shit. But like sometimes the sounds are just so like, If all I see are MIDI notes on the screen, I'm like, this isn't music. Right, like, right. You know, like it's got to be like, I got to do something here to, you know, make it interesting and like human.
Yeah. Not just Skynet, you know?
It's
basically
exactly.
Skynet speaking to you if you don't add anything like
well,
that.
Well, music is mistakes. I mean, let's face it. The feel is the drummer hitting, you know, one of his drums on the, not on the beat. That's what feel totally. Is, you know.
Well, so like, well. Now I'll stand up for myself. Now that I'm talking to all two, right. Listen, I know I'm in fucking axe heaven here, but if there's one thing I can stand up to drummers for, the good drummers, Brad, we know how to move around on a click.
That's what I mean.
A click a little ahead. I can bring it a little behind.
You got to push it.
But I'm
all
still
that.
On time, guy, you know?
But the definition of feel, like, you know, hitting. I mean, only, you know, you have to be really good to hit your snare behind the beat. You know, that's different.
Or you just have to listen to a lot of early to mid 70s Isaac Hayes records. And then it's just super easy. Trust me. It's just right there for you. So, Dave, you're going into the basement and it seems like you have, you know, a good like year and a half of work going. So what's you know, is anything really formed? Like what's this work going towards currently?
Well, I mean, I just finished the LP for my new project, which I'm pretty stoked about. And like I mentioned earlier, I've been working with my buddy, Sam Bell, who did the last MTV record. And so he, you know, produced it. I wrote the music, you know, he helped with some of that stuff. He helped with some of the drum programming, but a lot of that I ended up doing myself, which was really fun.
What's kind of the vibe musically there?
I don't know. It's like big, you know, there's, I mean, it's hard to say, man. It's like a collection of kind of like all the stuff I've done. There's lots of loops. There's lots of big, huge, guitar, you know, there's a lot of guitar moments on the record, but each song, so it's 10 songs and there's, guest vocalists all over it. Right. So there's,
okay, cool.
So there's like five different guest vocalists and then Sam sang a few songs himself. So it's kind of like soundtracky in a way, because each song has its own, vibe in terms of the lyrics and the voices that come in and out.
That's fun. And did you, when you sent the songs to singers, did you have, you know, any concepts for lyrics or melody, or you're just like, you know, have at it?
A lot of times it was kind of have at it. Like I didn't have any concepts for lyrics necessarily, but we would focus on writing a lot of, you know, like top line melodies. Mm. And some of those for the acoustic or for the instrumental songs, the two instrumental songs, obviously those melodies are in there. And sometimes we would use the melodies for the other songs, for, you know, as kind of like a guide for the vocalist. Right. Or they would, you know, go off on their own and we would realize, oh, hey, like they came up with a really great part. Like, let's, you know, let's now use that as the melody for this bit.
Right. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah. So it was really cool. I mean, I wrote like so much shit. I mean, there's some stuff, you know, probably like upwards of like 20 different things. Right. And so right. 10 are on the record, and then some of the other stuff will come out, next year as, you know, like collaborations with other people or other little projects here and there. But yeah, it's been really, I don't know. It's been exciting to be creative in a new way.
Yeah. So that sounds fun.
I'm really looking forward to
it. With all that collaboration. Can you, say any of the singers that you've been working with or?
Yeah. I mean, Bayonne, is on one of the tracks. We toured with him. Julia from the Coat Hangers is on a song. Let's see. Jake did a song. Buddy of Sam's from the UK, did a song. He's in a band called the Sand Band, and they were on Dove's label for a while. So he's got that super awesome, like really deep British tone.
Ooh, yeah.
And that song is one of the highlights for me. But yeah, it's cool. So I also kind of want to use it as like the record is somewhat of like a, I don't know, like a, not a showcase, but just like, this is kind of what I want to do moving forward is like write with people and write for people. So it's kind of like, hey, here's the vibe that I am, you know, that I like to write it. Like, let's do some shit.
Yeah. So. Are you kind of, you know, are you hoping that one of these vocalists or something turns into something that you can do more full, or this is going to be the spirit of the project, or you have no idea yet?
I don't really have any idea. Yeah. I don't really have any idea, but right. In theory, I think the spirit of the project will be, hopefully will be me collaborating with other vocalists and musicians and kind of making unique songs that either live on their own or come together as like an album. Ah, so
that seems fun. That's exciting. I'm stoked to hear that.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I'm excited to get it out. It's been a long time, working on it. So it's, next year is poised to be a lot of music being released. So that's,
I can imagine that's tough. I mean, you know, I know from my experience of the last like 3, 4, 5 years too, like when you're working so hard, but you have to like really convince people that you're working because you're not actually like I'm not just sitting in this fucking. I'm not on Fortnite YouTube, you know. Like,
right. Exactly. Doing the thing. I promise.
Yeah,
I'm working. Like this is all going to result in something. Right. The culmination is just around the corner.
I think everyone just imagines like Jason Segel at the beginning, forgetting Sarah Marshall, just eating like giant bowls of cereal in a robe. You know, yeah. Well, I'm really stoked to hear all this. This is going to be fun. Does it have a name yet?
Not yet. It's I'm talking to a couple different labels at the moment. So it's kind of nameless. I have a few ideas, but that's like the hardest part, right? It's like, I don't know. I feel like I don't want to name the project David Knutson because that's just lame. And it's not necessarily the spirit of the project. And then my other bands all have such shitty names. It's like, I'm really bad at like naming bands like Botch. Like we literally opened up a dictionary and looked for a word and it was like, oh, all right, we're 17 years old. We'll just be Botch. Oh,
yeah. But those were the days of just having one faintly dark word as your band name. Everyone had it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it's Botch, Trial.
In context, I think it's a good name for sure.
It is a good name.
Well, I mean, really, any name can be good. It's all about like the music and what they achieve, right? I mean, it's not like Pink Floyd is a great band name.
No,
I mean,
dude, think about Green Day,
like
Pearl Jam, yes, U2. Exactly. These are the worst band names ever. Yeah, ever. So going back to Botch, I don't know if this ever happens to you, but sometimes my mind plays tricks on me and I have memories that aren't real. Yeah. And I was thinking back and I'm like, wait a minute. I'm pretty sure I went to a diner with Botch in the late 90s after a show.
Where would this have been?
It would have been in Highland Park, New Jersey, the day after playing in New Brunswick. You would have played at the Melody Bar in New Brunswick. Yep. You would have stayed at Chris Ross's house, who was the drummer from Nora.
Yep.
And the following morning, probably me and a bunch of other scummy friends of Chris joined all of you for a breakfast at Penny's Diner in Highland Park. So we had a meal together when I was like 19, the day after a Botch show.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't remember that diner specifically. I do remember would Dillinger have played on this show?
They may have been on the set. I think you guys played there twice, and I think Dillinger may have been on one of them. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's a good chance in those days that
Dillinger. See, the Melody Bar was so much fun. I think was this a show where there were naked people flying around? Did Brian get naked?
Yeah, maybe, because it was a pretty wild show, and that was one of the reasons I brought it up, was because I was like, Chris, like, so I'm good friends with Chris, who is the promoter of this show, still good friends, and I was like, what are some memories that like stand out to you about that show? I wanted to share some of these with you because I thought you would think they're funny. One quote was, their drummer was super crabby, but in a fun way. is that fairly accurate?
Or? Oh, yeah. That's that was like kind of just, I don't know. That was just a vibe sometimes,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, he was annoyed that he had to carry all that shit up all those stairs.
Oh, the Melody had not a good load in. Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean, Tim always, he always played well, but you know, he's an intense dude and he's fairly like, he can be very contrarian. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he can be a little feisty and
I love him. I mean, you can hear it in the playing, right? Like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
And he wrote at the end of this, he says, I remember the drummer at the end being like, when this is done, I'm taking this kit and selling it and never playing ever again. We thought he was kidding, but I actually think he did it.
he didn't do it, but there were a lot of threatened I'm done with this sort of vibes.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, depending on the show or the mood or whatever. But yeah, no, he never like sold a drum kit and just said like later. And
yeah,
then,
right.
And then, you know, hitched a ride home with somebody. Or
is that what happens when you take a jazz dude and make him play like hardcore shows?
I was going to say, yeah, probably.
Yeah. I mean, they're not comfortable with the toil.
right. Exactly. It's beneath them.
Yeah. And then he told me, and he said the second time through the guitarist was using a Chaos pad and it was the fucking best thing ever. I don't even know what that is. What is a Chaos pad?
So a Chaos pad was like intended to be used by like a DJ to to like fuck up, you know, like whatever songs they're playing. And so it was like this, you know, there's this little pad obviously on it that's like an XY axis and it has these different effects, and depending on where you move your finger it like changes the effects, and they can be anywhere from like weird just like delays to like chorus weird, you know, chorusing stuff to like distortions. But there were some that were just like super filthy and like would just destroy the signal in a fairly interesting way. And so yeah, there were a couple moments during songs where there was like a loop going. And so I would you know, go back to this little pad that was on top of my amp and just kind of like go nuts with it.
That's awesome.
From there. But yeah, that was kind of that was a pretty cool thing. That was a suggestion from Matt Bayless, actually. He was all like, right, have you seen this thing? He was like, this might be kind of cool, blah, blah, blah. I think the dude from like, I don't know, a few years ago, the dude from Muse like had one built into his like guitar.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you've seen that. Like it's like past like the, you know, towards the end of the body of the guitar. And I feel like he had something like that built into it. So he could like noodle around with it, you know, with his like picking hand while he was, you know, like playing with his left hand.
But I heard that dude's got a couple extra dollars laying around. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's got people that can do that.
Yeah, I think so. He also said at the Melody, Mike Mowry was TMing them.
Oh yeah.
And they covered up all the windows for the light show. He had to climb up about 15 feet to cover the circle window at the top. Now this part I really remember, because, you know, if you were that age in 99, I was 17, 18 as well. And I mean, I was actually not even allowed at the Melody Bar most of the time. And they just let me in because they liked me. And but I remember specifically at that show, you know, the low parts of a Botch song where, you know, you're just on the simple beat and the bass line, and then the fucking room just went pitch black. And I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck is happening right now? And all of a sudden the part would kick back in and the lights would kick back on. And it was honestly one of those like, what the fuck is happening kind of experiences for me, like seeing a show. 'Cause a lot of bands, you know, like you said, you know, maybe musically, you know, you guys were taken from Dead Guy, but they weren't doing anything like that live. Dillinger didn't start doing that stuff live, I think, until maybe after you guys. So what was the, you know, I think about the time you came from and like, you know, this mid to like late 90s Seattle thing going on. And it kind of had this real vibe to it like that. Like, what was the, I guess the real impetus for trying to do something like that at that time?
Yeah,
because it was so different. Like,
I mean, I think, you know, obviously we, well, you know, when we started playing, everything in Seattle was really more like youth crew style, hardcore kind of stuff, or like Undertow kinds of things. But, you know, Brian and I specifically, we were always still really into like, stuff that wasn't just straight up like old school youth crew hardcore. So it was like, you know, we'd listen to like Morbid Angel, and then we'd like, you know, go down to Olympia and watch an Unwound show, or, you know, like any of those like K or Kill Rockstars records bands or whatever. And then it was like, oh, this, what's this like shit coming out of San Diego? The Gravity stuff, like Angel Hair or Heroin or Mohinder or those, those types of bands. So I think we pulled from a lot of different influences, which is why musically, you know, it kind of like stood out more than, say, the other stuff that was coming out of Seattle at the time.
Yeah.
And for a while, you know, like, people didn't really like us here because of that, right? Like, we didn't fit into that thing. So it took us a while to, like, win people over. But one of the big turning points was the Ink and Dagger tour, which was in 97. And I think, you know, after touring the U.S. with them, it was, it, you know, it wasn't like all of a sudden we were like, we need to step up our game and be like, you know, have a show. But it was more like, you know, they would dress up, or, you know, do the face paint thing. And sometimes they had someone doing lights or whatever. And it was more of a, there was more to it than just the music.
Sure.
And, you know, for the live show. And so I think, you know, we
which
were
was
like,
almost like looked down upon at the time, right? Like, it was like,
totally. Yeah,
like you're
yeah.
being like a rock star, like something if you're doing anything extra, right?
Yeah. And so I think, you know, subconsciously it was kind of like, well, how do we take this to the next level? You know, how can we make the show even more intense? And so I don't remember exactly. I feel like maybe the first time we did it was just like on a one-off show in like somewhere in random like Oregon or something. And we were like, let's just bring these work lights around and have like, I don't know if it was Ben Varelin or, you know, Dave's brother or something come and like, just like turn them on and off when the songs like kicked in or whatever. And then ultimately it kind of became a thing that, you know, seeing people's faces, like kind of like what you were talking about, like it's dark during this like quiet moment or this section of the song. And then all of a sudden, like these lights come on and, you know, Dave starts jumping around and going nuts and the crowd is illuminated and everyone is just like losing their minds. It added like a, just a cool, intense element to the show. Yeah. And I don't know. It was just like, and then it just kind of like became the thing that we did.
Right.
It just kind of like became the, that's like the bot show. That's what's going to happen.
I love it.
But it's funny that you mentioned Dillinger because like, so we did a tour with Jesuit and Dillinger and they were opening, right? Like this is like right when just like the first 7-inch or whatever under the Running Board came out.
Yeah.
And like a year or two later, I remember Ben Weinman. He was like, yeah, as soon as that tour was over, we drove to Milwaukee Metal Fest or whatever it was. And on the way, we were like, first stop, Home Depot.
Yeah.
He was like, as soon as we left that tour with you, the very next show, we had a bunch of halogen lights that we had. Like,
that's right.
I don't know, Tom Apostolopoulos or someone in their crew, like turning on and off. And it was like, okay.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Which was also funny because then we went to Europe together and it was like, well, can we just all share the same halogen lights? like, can we just all share the same strobes and stuff so we don't have to like double up on this shit?
That's so funny, man.
Yeah.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So for my, you know, I wasn't like intimate with the experience. So, you know, when minus the Bears coming together, like post botch, you know, there's sort of this very like romantic, you know, story about you all kind of living in the same neighborhood and like, you know, drinking at the same bar and it kind of happening like really organically. Can you tell me a little bit about like, you know, not only, you know, putting Minus the Bear together, which I'm sure you've talked a lot about, but it's another one of those things that, you know, I noticed like a theme in your career, which is if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it differently and we're going to do something new. And so the idea to me that you popped from Botch to Minus the Bear, it's hard to see. And I wonder what those conversations were like early to really like, put together the lineup and kind of get the sound going in the direction it did.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're totally right. Like the, you know, we all kind of knew each other from the Seattle scene at first, right. From playing with each other's bands, like Jake and Sharks and then Aaron and Corey and Kilsady. You know, the first time I met Corey actually, which is too bad he's not here, but the first time I met Corey, we were at this bar that we used to always go to, the Cha-Cha Lounge, and he was wearing an Econochrist shirt.
Okay.
And I was like, who's that dude? I haven't seen anyone wear an Econochrist shirt in Seattle.
That's
like,
unique, yeah.
Forever. And I was like, I should go say hi to this dude. So, you know, like that's how we became friends, was because he was wearing the shirt in the bar.
So, I mean, she just put like, hey, cool shirt, bro. Like,
I have no idea what.
I wonder what your pickup line was.
Then. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so it was very organic the way we met. But, you know, so the last few years of Botch, you know, like I don't know, we all like were really fatigued on like touring and only playing with like the local or whatever metal band was in town or a hardcore band or whatever. Like it was just like really hard for us because in the van we would not listen to that kind of music at all. Right. So I think all of our interests were kind of like, or influences were starting to change and whatnot. It was really hard for us to write after Romans. And I was writing stuff that was way more in the vein of like Don Caballero or like, I don't know, ripping off a Built to Spill song or like doing something that was like not botchy in any way.
Right.
So when I met, you know, Aaron and rehearsed and you know, practiced with him for the first time in Minus the Bear, it was like, I mean, it was kind of like a revelation playing with a drummer that was more into like maybe dance and R&B grooves rather than something that was like more jazzy and technical and and whatnot. And so I think in that instant, we kind of like both realized there's some fairly unique stuff that the two of us together can kind of create. And
was Aaron, as a drummer, like was Aaron doing that kind of stuff prior to Minus the Bear? Cause it really is. It is very unique, especially that the real dancey four on the floor stuff. I mean, you just really weren't hearing much of that at the time.
Yeah. I think we were also like, kind of like all searching for new inspiration and, you know, we all kind of stumbled across like, you know, early Daft Punk records and, you know, like Basement Jacks and other stuff like that, sure. Kind of like together. And, you know, what's funny is that those like really early van rides that you do, you know, right, where you're like, right, where you're like listening to the same music and someone's, you know, like Aaron's always sitting shotgun with me and I'm driving and it's like, oh shit, listen to this, blah, blah, blah. And you just kind of like have this mind meld of, of influences kind of just like coming together. Then it's, I don't know, fairly unspoken thing. But then when you start playing with each other, it's like, you're on the same page from like the first note.
What a beautiful, strange cocktail that is, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's truly like a, I don't know, like a indescribable feeling.
It is. Yeah, it is.
And so, I mean, I think everything kind of just like took off from there. We all wanted to do something that wasn't, you know, Aaron was in Kill Sadie. He didn't want to do something that was like screamy and crazy. You know, I wanted to do a 180 from Botch. And so it kind of just, you know, grew out of the desire to change things up.
Yeah, yeah. And what was like the, do you remember like the first song that you came up with that you're like, all right, this is like, this is the direction. Like, was there anything like that that really kickstarted it like that way?
Well, the first time we rehearsed or practiced together, like I had like two songs worth of riffs that weren't necessarily like arranged or whatever. And so within the first practice we had had like, you know, like the first two songs off the first EP were like, boom, like here they are. I mean, it was kind of just like we hit the ground running. It was fairly cool. Like, I mean, I guess it wasn't, I should go back a minute. We rehearsed without Jake a few times and Corey and I were like, oh, we can just sing. We can do this.
Oh, really?
So there were a couple practices where like,
yes,
Corey and I were like, oh man, like one of us could sing. This will be great. Blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it was evident, like, okay, like we need to find someone to sing.
Right.
And we were all friends with Jake. And, you know, we loved Sharks and we thought he had a unique voice. And
did you actually give it a stab? Did you try to sing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, we had like mics and shit and we were trying to sing through this PA.
Are there any recordings of you and Corey as the lead singers?
There are not.
Oh, bummer. Bummer.
Thank God.
If there were only iPhones in those days, I would have been able to hear that. Yeah.
So thankful that this technology was not so advanced back then. But yeah, so then it was just kind of like, okay, we need someone to sing.
Yeah.
And Jake had heard a couple of things that we had kind of like demoed without vocals.
Right.
And he was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. So
did you have any, you said you had a little backlash from the like metal side of things. Was there like grumpy fucking old hardcore kids about the fact that you were doing something that different?
I think they were, honestly, I have no idea. I think people were just kind of like surprised that it was something that was that different.
Right.
You know? But at that point, like I had kind of, you know, I had kind of moved on personally from wanting to separate myself from that scene in general.
Yeah.
Cause I think I just needed a break. Like, it's funny. I was talking to Brian the other day and I think like if Botch had just said like, well, let's just like not do anything for like 6 or 9 or 12 months or whatever, and then see what happens. Like, we probably would have come back somewhat re-energized.
Yeah.
Maybe made more Botch songs. But in the moment, it was just like, you know, tour, 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 record, tour, get burnt out. And then it was like, okay, that one more tour, record, and then we're done.
Bands are always so dramatic. You know, it's like you didn't have to break up. You know, like guys could have just chilled out for a minute, you know, like it always happens like that.
Yeah. But in the moment, you're kind of just like, it doesn't seem like that at all is a possibility, right?
Usually emotions are at a level at that point. Right?
But that's what makes, you know, that's what makes bands great is that they're, you know, overly emotional and reactionary. And
yeah,
right. That's the energy, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. I guess the ones that are very diplomatic from the start maybe won't get anywhere.
Or they're just boring.
So I mean, you know, we're not gonna have to go through like, I'm not gonna make you go through like all 6 minus the Bear records and how all came to be and this and that, but I have some fun questions I want to ask you about your time with Minus the Bear.
Yeah, let's do it.
So after all these years being on the road, I guess this is Botch included too, What are the top three places that you have to eat on the road? A stop you have to make every time you're in that city.
Oh, man. What are some of these places? I mean, every time we're in D.C., I would always go to Ben's Chili Bowl.
Oh, Ben's. A godlike place. I love this place.
And you know, that was always a fun place to go to.
I don't think Bill Cosby eats for free anymore, though.
Right. Yeah. Just the Obamas now.
Because that is, have you seen, I don't know, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, Ben's Chili Bowl is a very, very famous spot in the U District in DC. And there used to be famously like something on the cash register that says like no free food. Except for Bill Cosby and the Obamas.
Yeah.
Right. And I think I hope he got nixed off the register by now.
Yeah. I haven't been there since the whole Cosby situation. So I,
well, if anyone's listening, write us into the program. I'm curious.
Yeah.
All right. So Ben's Chili Bowl. I agree with you there. That's a classic. But you can't go before the show, right? Can't go to Ben's pre.
No, but then, well, yeah, I've been many. Yeah, you have to go in the afternoon. I don't know. It gives you enough time to like work it out before you get on stage.
Sweat it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just in general, when you're in that part of the country, like there's nothing better than going to like a Waffle House.
Right.
And getting like, you know, breakfast for dinner.
Yes.
Like after, you know, super late night. I don't know if I should tell this story, but there was on the Circus Survive co-headlining tour we did, one of the guitar players got kicked out because we went to how did this story happen? He was drunk, obviously, right? And we went to Waffle House, and he showed up, and he was like all bloody or whatever, and he got in, but then he had to have like his tech came with him and was like, he wanted to sit with us. And we were like, it felt bad, but he were like, dude, we can't sit with you. Like, you got to go sit by yourself. And then his tech showed up and they sat alone. That's not a very good story. I'm sorry.
But I guess it
goes to show like he wasn't kicked out of the Waffle House, even though he was like super hammered and like just bloody.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, after a certain time of the night, that's par for the course.
Yeah. The Waffle. Yeah. Trying to think of a third place. I haven't thought about this in so long. I mean, a lot of times it's for me when we were touring, it wasn't like necessarily about where to go eat. It was about who I was going with.
Right.
And it was more about like meeting up with friends and saying, which place are we going to go to? Right. Like it was more about like seeing people that you hadn't seen in a long time, which is honestly like in this post minus the bear life now, that's like one of the most like hard things to adjust to was just like,
right,
you know, normally I'm used to like seeing my Boston friends every 6 months, like, right. You know, you can mark it on the calendar. And now it's like, I haven't seen those people, you know, I haven't seen those folks in like 2.5 years. I mean, obviously COVID has kind of made that a reality,
yes,
for everyone.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, the not seeing people part of it is one of like the weird sadnesses of post tour life.
Sure. I mean, have you had to come to any kind of, I guess, grips with that? Like, have there been, you know, relationships where you're like, oh, I guess that was just a touring thing? Or have you been able to keep, you know, these friendships just as strong from afar?
I mean, some people you realize are you see because maybe they're friends with someone else. And they're more friend. They're like they're better friends with someone else in the band or whatever, and that's fine. But like
a tour hang,
yeah. For the majority of the real people, it's, you know, it's easy to give a call to somebody or text or whatever. So, but it's more like that face to face like interaction.
Sure. That is tough.
Have you considered a podcast?
No.
that's
why
that
are you inviting tricky. More people into the space, Brad? We got a little inundated during the pandemic, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so top of your head, What is the craziest night in the history of Minus the Bear?
I mean, hands down, it's the night that I got arrested in Miami. Oh, right?
I'm arrested in Miami. Was Will Smith there? What happened? This is fun.
this was us opening up Recursive on the Ugly Oregon tour. Nice. And so there was a lot of time after the show, and they had a lot of alcohol.
Cursive was a drinking band in those days.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, and it's not like we weren't either. I mean, probably all of our writer went to alcohol at that
point.
but, you know, after the show, we find ourselves at some bar in downtown Miami. I get into, like, Corey and I, like, are outside, like, I mean, fighting in, like, a fun, like, funny way, not necessarily, like, we're not, like, angry at each other. It's just, like, a drunk, like, we're so fucked up, we're going to fight each other kind of thing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so, you know, we're, like, outside, he slaps my glasses off, something happens, like, I chip a tooth. It gets, you know, we're both wasted.
It's going a little far.
Yeah. And at that point, you know, we should have been like, okay, let's settle down. But you're drunk, so you have no idea what's happening. So then, like, the whole crew of people, like 15 of us, are like, okay, well, let's walk back towards the hotel down by the beach, blah, blah, blah. I somehow get separated from everybody. Uh-huh. And the next thing I know, there's like I'm behind a fence, and there's a paddy wagon with, like, cops coming to get me.
What?
And I have no idea what's happened. But apparently, when I got separated from the people, from the rest of the group, I thought that I was trying to get into some woman's, like, apartment.
Oh, no.
Like I was at the door of her townhouse thinking it was the hotel, trying to get in. So I'm banging on the door, trying to get in.
Yeah.
The cops show up.
Not great.
And on the police report, I'm charged with resisting arrest without violence. Because I guess I was saying, no, don't arrest me. Public intoxication. And then on the police report, it says he kept saying, fuck you, you fucking pigs. Open the gate yourself. Repeatedly, 6 or 7 times.
Oh, so I guess that is what resisting arrest without violence means.
Yeah. So I was like, I was behind this gate. I couldn't get out between this lady's townhouse and the gate in her yard. And I was like, fuck you, you fucking pigs. Open the gate yourself.
Oh. I wonder so much what your brain was telling you in that moment. Like, you're like, yeah, I'm in the right place. Like,
yeah, I mean, not one of my finer moments. So then I'm obviously like, you know, I get my mugshot taken. I'm in the Dade County Jail, you know, for the night. Like, you know, my glasses are fucked up. They give me like a sandwich wrapped in like saran wrap. And I unwrapped it and put it down. And then immediately there were like cockroaches.
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, no, this is not happening. And then Corey and Rob Bass from the TM of Cursive bailed me out. They were like, we were calling like hospitals. We didn't know where you went.
Oh my God.
We were like,
yeah. Cause to them, you just broke off the group, right? Like, you
they didn't know where I was. You know, we were like finally like called and they said you were here and you know, they picked me up at like 8 or 9 in the morning, but they haven't slept cause they've been on the beach all night. Like, getting even more drunk, like, you know, scoring other shit. So it's like,
yeah, right.
Anyway, that was
that's a heck
for a good thanks for a good story, but that's, you know, yeah,
that's a heck of a Miami night. It actually could have panned out a lot worse, like if you ran into someone that wasn't the police or something at that time.
No, totally, that could have ended so much.
If you wandered into Little Havana and started, you know, busting someone's store down. Yeah. How did that pan out in the long run? Did you have any issues long term from that, or was able to put it to bed after?
What did I do? I think I had to hire a lawyer from Seattle, or a local lawyer, and we just talked on the phone and he charged me way too much money and got it off my record. I don't know.
That's not good.
Not the best time.
Funny.
Yeah, you know.
So what do you think now looking back, like, what would you say is the, like, quintessential period of Minus the Bear? When do you think you were grooving the most fluidly and just things were you know, the easiest, and the wheels were just rolling the right way.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be like Manos Alosa or Planet of Ice. Probably, I mean, Planet of Ice was, or Manos Alosa was really when we kind of like started hitting our stride, I feel like.
Yeah.
Pirates was kind of a little, it's got some good songs, but it's a little like unfocused.
Sure.
And it was more of like a first LP in terms of like, these are the songs we have. These are the songs that are going to be on the record type of thing. Right. Whereas with Osa, we were able to like write everything, you know, like within a constrained, you know, in one period of time, in one window, and everything was a lot more, I don't know, just like fit and flowed with each other more. I mean, that's one of those moments where it was, you know, the creativity was kind of like unspoken, or the inspiration was unspoken, and it was, you know, get in a room and, there wasn't a lot of talking. It was just a lot of like looks while you're playing, or head nods, or that kind of thing. And then with Planet of Ice, that's like really when we all started, we were listening to the, you know, like the same kind of like 70s prog rock kind of stuff.
Right.
And so we were really in the same headspace for that one too. And then, I mean, if you're asking for, yeah, I mean, those were definitely the two records where we were kind of like firing on all cylinders. I feel like Omni, I still love that record too, but it's not, we didn't have the same camaraderie and influences. I think we were moving a little apart from each other, and it was a little more difficult to like square our ideas with each other's ideas, which makes for a good record sometimes. And I, like I said, I still love that record, but it's just not as, You can tell that it's, the band isn't exactly on the same page like we were in the previous two.
I could see that. Yeah, that makes sense. And what do you think, like, at that period, was it just the, you know, the commotion and the energy of just doing record after record and all those tours, and you just kind of lose that sense of it a little bit? Like, was that the time you maybe needed to take a pause for a second or something like that?
Yeah, you know, maybe. It's funny, like those other two records, also on Planet of Ice, like we had those titles like very early on, right? And so we had this like title that we were, all the music was sort of like aspiring to like fit into the vibe of that title. I know Menace also isn't like much of a, it's not really a vibe necessarily, but it was like a moment in Spain where we like named the album and like, we knew where it was going to go. Whereas with Omni, it was, we didn't know where we were trying to get. Right. Whereas with Planet of Ice, we knew where we were trying to go. And with Osa, we knew where we were trying to go.
Right. Was that different people going in different directions, or was like, was there like leadership in one way or the other who was trying to push a certain way and you were pushing another way?
No, I think it's like that classic thing with Omni of like a band, like trying to get to a different level and like trying to make a different sounding record, you know, like all the other records we'd been working with, Matt Bayless, and, you know, he would produce an engineer and he knew exactly what we were doing. And on Omni, it was like, well, let's use a different producer and we're going to go to a different, we're going to make this without a label involved and then shop it around. And I think it was just one of those things where, you know, bands need to do that, right?
Yeah.
Where they aspire to change their sound and they want to do something different and experiment. And sometimes the result is amazing. And I think Omni is a great, fantastic record. It's just different, and I'm not sure that we knew exactly where we wanted it to finish. You know, like there wasn't like an end, like with the title thing, there wasn't like an overarching theme that everything had to fit into, so we were kind of like figuring out where we wanted to go in real time.
And it seems as if, I mean, between that and so that was kind of like you're kind of going for it a little bit at that time.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this is a weird thing to bring up, but it's like at the end of the Planet of Ice tour run, our mode of transportation changed. And I think that kind of got us off the same page, which is a weird thing to say, right? Like before that, we were all in vans and all that stuff. And at the end of Planet of Ice, we started being in buses, right?
Yeah.
And so like when you're on the bus, it's like everybody has their own headphones and they're listening to their own thing. Whereas previously, like even if you didn't want to, you were forced to listen to whoever was driving music.
Like if someone was into a new record, like it or not,
you're going to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so I don't know. Like sometimes I'll think in hindsight, like, God, I wonder what would have happened with Omni if we hadn't got on the bus at the end of the Planet of Ice cycle and we were all just forced to listen to each other's tunes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because it's so easy to like vibe out to your own shit when you're on a bus.
Right.
And, you know, at some point you kind of have, you know, like you need to, like at some point we needed to make the change because of the logistics of like doing the promo and the shows the whatever. But yeah, like the whole communal aspect of the van, I think is, it can be kind of important to like the creativity.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's a really good point. And I guess it's like all those corny things that like some bigger bands do, you know, like when we were like 18 and you'd hear about someone like, you know, Metallica, oh, they go out to, they have a band meeting like once a week, or they, you know, they go to therapy together, like something like that.
Right.
These are probably like the weird extra steps they actually have to take once you get out of the van, right? Like, because it's so easy to disconnect from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting. You bring that up. I wonder if you were able to like go on a scale of like 100 bands and see what their what happened to their music when they went from a van to a bus. I bet there would be like a significant change.
It's also that, you know what, I think though, it's also that moment when you go from us against the world to like, us like kind of as a company, you know?
Right. That's like, true.
The van is a very obvious, like proletariat sort of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it kind of has to be by default, right? Cause if you're, you know, driving through the middle of Kansas and something happens to the van, which can happen at any point. Like, there's no driver. There's no, like, this is all of our responsibility to take care of right now, or else we're stuck in the middle of Kansas.
Right.
Yeah. That is a very unifying thing. I mean, from the outside, it's interesting to hear it like that because I can hear what you're saying musically, the jump into Omni. But then also I kind of hear, like, when I listen to some of those songs on Omni, I kind of hear like sort of the slickest, you know, kind of choruses I've ever heard, minus the bear maybe happening, like,
sure,
like real kind of like catchy stuff that, you know. And I noticed that you guys, you know, debuted on Billboard higher than you ever did during Omni, like, to a point, like, it worked, right?
No, absolutely. And like I said, like, I think that's a great record, but you asked like specifically, like, when were we in the groove and why were we in the groove? And right. So that's why I answered the way I did.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, the, you know, at that point, I think Jake and Alex were really into like getting the choruses super hooky. And so was Ciccarelli, right? That's why we, that's why we hired him to, you know, produce and engineer the record, was because we loved all the stuff that he had done before. And, you know, we thought, and he did help us take those parts and, you know, bring them to a level that we hadn't been able to achieve before.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't want it to sound like I'm talking shit about that record at all. It's just from an insider, from like a band member's perspective, that's like knowing all the little things that were going on.
Totally.
You know, that's kind of what it seems like to me.
Yeah. Did you at that time, I mean, how much interest from majors and stuff were you getting, and how seriously did you consider that?
I mean, we at the end of Planet of Ice, I mean, there were like pretty much all the majors have somebody out at a show somewhere here or there. And, you know, some of the conversations were cool and whatever. And but it never really got to the place where it seemed like it was going to fit well, right? Like, I remember being at a meeting at Warner Brothers, in LA or wherever it is. You know, we were talking about stuff and the whoever it was trying to sell us on like the 360 deal, you know? Right. And at that point we're like, we've built the band up to this level. Yeah. Like, you're not taking any of our, like live tour money, because like we built this thing ourselves. Like, you don't get any of it. Right. You know, like the merchandise was great. The ticket sales were great, all that stuff. And you know, and he looks at us and he's like, well, you don't think of it as a 360 deal. You think of it as a 365 deal. And I was like, oh, man. Like, because they're working every day for you.
Boo.
And it was just like, oh, man, are you... Like, did you really just say it's a 365 deal? Yeah, yeah. Like, give me a fucking break, dude. Come on, dude.
You just brought a bunch of old hardcore kids into a room and said you were going to take their merch money.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? Bad idea.
So once, like, I mean, that, I think once the dude said that, like, it was kind of like, oh, I don't know if we're ever going to see eye to eye on this.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's a terrible, awful, weird thing to say. Yeah, I don't think I'd be into that either.
Yeah.
So you never actually got to that point where you were like, all right, like, let's do it. Like,
no, I mean, we took the meetings, or we talked to the people after the shows, or
got a free dinner here and there.
Yeah, 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 that kind of thing. But it was never to the point where we were like, all right, we're ready to do this. And to be honest, like, I'm super glad that we didn't.
Okay.
And, you know, that was kind of like back in the time too, where like Warp Tour was so huge.
Right.
You know, and for a long time we got a lot of pressure. Like, you guys need to play Warp Tour. You guys need to play Warp Tour.
Yeah. I had the same thing.
And it was like, I don't know that we fit. In hindsight, I kind of wish we had, just to see what would have happened.
Yeah.
But I know that we made the right choices in the moment, and for the longevity of the band to like do what we did.
Sure.
But I think there were certain things like that that they probably would have wanted that we wouldn't have wanted to, like, you know, we wouldn't have wanted to do. So,
yeah, I don't think Minus the Bear and a Warp Tour is the best idea.
Yeah. And like 07, could you imagine us playing like Planet of Ice songs? And like 2007 at like a Warp Tour, like, I can,
and I don't think it would have went that well. Yeah, like, I do picture it.
Right, right.
I don't think it's great.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with Warp Tour. It's, you know, like, it's like turned millions of kids on to like different music, yeah, right? But like, I don't think that it's like, I don't think that that was, would have been good.
I gotta be honest, before we started doing Going Off Track Again, I felt like a whole way about Warp Tour. Very negative, very negative. And we've done a lot of interviews in the last year or two from bands or people who like literally like got their starts at Warped Tour. And it's like,
sure,
this really, really important thing to them where they saw like all their favorite bands in the same place. So I do think, like, you know, maybe for people our age, we were like a couple years out of the fact that it was super vital or important to us.
Yeah.
You know, it was more of like a medium to help our bands, but like there were the kids who like grew up with the Warped Tour thing have a very, very different way of looking at it for sure.
Yeah.
I've had to get off my self-righteous old man thing about that as much as I could. But, so, you know, all these years in the business now, the music biz, Dave, like, and now you have, you know, the gift of hindsight, your father. What kind of gems would you pass down to like a younger band just getting started? What are some things you've learned through the years that are constants that are just, hey, this is what you're going to have to do, and there's really no other way around it?
Yeah, I mean, it's super cheesy to say, but I mean, like, be genuine to yourself as like I've always done that. And even going back to like the Warped Tour conversation a minute ago, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, if it doesn't feel right, it's probably not the right thing. And, right. You know, like, normally your gut can tell you everything you need to know. And there's certain points where my gut told me not to do certain things and we did, and it didn't work out that great. Right.
Right. Sure.
So I don't know. I think just be aware of who you surround yourself with, and like, I don't know, like, don't just let anyone in. You know, there's a lot of people out there that'll say, and this is a jaded old guy talking, right? There's a lot of people out there that will say whatever that you want to hear and can blow smoke up your ass, but
it's jaded, you know, but also accurate.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But it's also just a cliche too, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
I hate to like be that guy that's spouting cliches, but it's like, yeah, believe in yourself. Like, don't do anything that goes against what your gut's telling you, and be careful of like letting people in, because a lot of times they're just there for the time being and they're not going to be there later on.
Sure. Yeah, I do think that's so important. It's like, if you can just, as you said, if you can just be genuine to yourself and your music, however it pans out, at least you can be proud of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. God, there was something else that was on the tip of my tongue, but that will...
Don't bring a bath towel?
Nah.
Classic rookie mistake.
Yeah, yeah, and
don't bring it. They always bring a bath towel on tour. That's how you can sniff out a rookie.
And I guess don't go on a bus. I don't know. Like,
never go.
No, well, you know what I was going to say, I think, was like, try to do as much for yourself as you can in the beginning, right? I mean, I don't know how much that really plays these days.
How so? Do as much.
Well,
like keep like, it as
I, like, we never had a manager until like Point
sure.
of Advice, right? You know, like,
yeah,
we.
Yeah.
But now I mean, the whole everything's changed since then, so I don't know what that even means.
Well, there's still ways to build value for the band. You know, like the way that you did it, like you said, was, you know, you built a touring empire and merch, but there's still ways to build value before you seek out help from other people.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess that changes these, you know, from year to year, what you need to do. But yeah, I mean, try to do as much on your own. And, you know,
I think bands get managers way too fucking early. Always.
Yeah. See, that's kind of what I feel like is the case these days, is
yeah.
that like everybody has a manager, and it's not like you need like everybody
yeah.
doesn't need a manager.
No. And like, honestly, until there's actual money, it's just actually stupid.
Right.
You know, like, you are cutting a percentage of nothing to somebody for not doing that. Like, if you're not making money, you have nothing that needs management. Like, the only thing that needs management is the things you don't have time to do.
Right.
And I think people go to that way quick. You should try to find yourself a booking agent way before that, right?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Yes. Because yeah. they make you money.
Yeah, they actually make you money.
They,
the other
like,
ones
they want you to, they want you to play shows. They want you to, like, you know, get
yeah.
bigger. They,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. it's in your best interest.
That's awesome. Well, Dave, I think that's about it I got for you for now, man. That was fun. Thanks.
Yeah, that was great, man. I appreciate it. Thanks thanks for asking.
I didn't even talk about the live album. That was why we're on the horn.
Oh, well, I mean,
that's why we're on the horn. Oh, I'm the worst. I'm the worst. I'm no Dan Rather. This is why I'm podcasting.
Tell us, Dave, about your new album.
Yeah. Oh, let's get to this. Hey, Brad, can you cut this into the beginning? Well, the only question I had about that before I let you off, because it was when you're doing the farewell album, I was curious, just musically how you put it together. Did you bring a board on that whole tour?
Yeah, we brought our own. The first time we've ever done it, we brought our own front of house console
okay.
with us, and then just recorded every show.
So every song, every show, and then just figured it out after.
Yeah, every song, every show. You know, and like, we all had, there were certainly like highlights, right?
Right.
So those were the shows that we kind of like investigated first. And I mean, it was kind of like the reason it took so long to come out was because, yeah, there's just like so many fucking takes of every goddamn song.
Yeah, that seems really hard to thin out the herd. There.
Yeah, and so it was kind of like a thing where it's like, well, just listen to X number of, you know, like this show, see what's good. I mean, I gotta say, like, Sam, really helped in editing down some of the choices.
That sounds really hard, actually.
And it was, as a band member, it was like none of us even wanted to like approach that because it was such a daunting number of songs.
Because I could see it. It's like, do I pick the one where I like flubbed once, but the feel was perfect? Or do I take the one where I played perfect and it, you know, like that would,
right. Well, know, I mean,
freak me out.
Yeah. And it's funny because like you also, because it's audio only, right? Because it's a record, like there's the whole element of the show and the lights and the production and the crowd and like everything that, you know, like I may have remembered X song from Philly as being amazing, but that was just my memory of like the crowd in front of me going nuts.
Yeah.
And when I listen back to it, like it's totally different, right?
Right.
And maybe it wasn't like the best performance and no one's going to know how crazy the crowd was going. So
yeah.
You know, like let's pick a song where the performance is maybe a little bit tighter, but still has the energy.
Right. Cause it's hard. So, I mean, cause some shows feel better, simply cause you got a good night's sleep the night before. It had nothing to do with even how you played. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's so many different factors go into it. Right.
Yeah.
And just like the vibe of the show, you know, like if the crowd's dead, like, honestly, I gotta say, it's like surprising that the first song on the album is from LA, because like, you know, LA crowds are notorious for not really giving a shit.
The worst.
But man, like that LA show, we were like into it. Like listening back, it was like, damn, like we were really going for it. Maybe it was just like, this is our last time in LA. Fuck you.
Yeah, right.
You're gonna love it.
Speaking of being too cool. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I can't wait to hear all of it. I heard the one song. It's gonna be fun. It's like what, 26, 28 songs on it?
25, 26, something like that. Yeah.
Awesome.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a great piece to give to the fans. It'll be awesome. And just for my own curiosity, like what are we thinking? Is Will Minus the Bear ever show its face again?
Probably not. I have no idea. It's no.
Good. I like a real answer, my friend. That's good.
Yeah.
You're an honest man, Dave. All right. Well, thanks for giving me all that time. That was awesome. I had a lot of fun chatting with you.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, yeah. See, I asked the most important questions last, as all good interviewers do, you know?
I think it's okay. I think it's fine, man.
I got to start, you know, I have lots of notes. Sometimes I don't organize the notes.
I don't know that you should start an interview with, like, tell me about the new record.
Oh, no, it's the worst. I got to be honest today, Brad. I was doing some research for this interview by listening to other podcasts, other music podcasts.
Mm.
And man, people talk even more than I do.
You mean hosts?
Yeah. Like they don't shut the fuck up. I'm like, Jesus, you know, you're interviewing someone, right?
Yeah.
Don't you want to hear what they say?
I've heard that too.
Yeah. But that was fun. I'm glad Dave gave us all that time. I'm really excited. Sounds like the stuff he's working on in the basement there is going to be real interesting.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that come out. That's going to be really cool. And I love Minus the Bear. I love Botch. Always just find people to be around. I don't know, man. Nothing bad to say. What do you have to say, Brad?
Well, Benny, I have to say, if you would like to stay updated with Dave, follow him at David Knudsen on Twitter and Instagram, where you get your social media. And of course, Minus the Bear also, Instagram and Twitter at Minus the Bear and Facebook.
Wow.
Benny, back to you.
You're getting really good at this. Have you always had this voice in your pocket?
I suppose.
You could have used this at all times. How entertaining is it?
I run out of gas real quick. That was it. That was as much as I could do right there.
That's all you got. Yeah. Yeah, I get a couple more Bevs in you.
Yeah.
Okay. But, yeah, if anyone is listening and you dig the show, you know, maybe give it 5 stars. If you're not going to give it 5 stars, just don't be an asshole, you know, just don't bother. Like, I see these people writing these reviews on podcasts like, well, I wish you did that. You know what? Just go listen to a podcast you like. Shut the fuck up. If you're going to leave a review, I personally would love it to sound like the lyrics to a Silk Sonic song. You know, I want velvety, buttery words. I want lusciousness. I want sex appeal.
Butter.
Basically, remember, Brad is going to be in silk boxers in about 40 minutes. So, or he might already be. And I want you to envision that maybe with some hot cherry sauce or something when you write the review. Or we have a Patreon. Someone yelled at me the other day for saying it wrong, so I'm going to say it even worse. Patreon. We have a Patreon.
People just don't learn, do they, that if they chide you for saying something, that you're obviously pronouncing the way that you want to pronounce it. My wife gives me total shit about Albany. I'm like, Albany. Yeah, it's on the way to Albany.
Of course it's called that.
Yeah, but...
Even tonight, I was like, hey, kids, how's your salmon?
Wait, what's that?
Salmon.
Oh,
you know, Saul.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, cousin Solomon.
But of course, you're just going to crank it up if they try to, like, you know, correct you. So.
Oh, yeah, of course I am. I'm an asshole. So, yeah, we have a Patreon. And if you dig the show, we fund our program through the Patreon and we post some funny stuff and we do a chat once a week on Discord. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you can join us if you join the Patreon. If not, you are unwelcome. Not allowed.
But you may follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Going Off Track.
Yeah,
you can also
go
to Venmo at Off Track and leave us a tip if you want. We'll take $1, $5, $5,000.
I don't care.
You know?
Money's money. Shekel to shekel.
Do like that other guy like last week who gave us $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah, and guess what? I went by that dude's house and I fluffed him. That's that. You give us $1 million tip, I'll come over to your house. I'll jerk you off.
Careful, Benny.
Is there really a millionaire listening? I mean, I also got to think here. I'm going to be splitting it with you.
Oh, no. I'll tell you
taxes.
What. If you want to give Benny $1 million to fluff you, I won't. I'll take 5%. I'll be happy with that.
Okay. All right. It's not bad. Good deal for you. $50,000 to watch me jerk someone else off.
Wait, I have to watch?
You don't have to do anything. Jesus.
All right.
And I'm not even bringing up our female listeners. So just be inappropriate. Okay.
I'm calling this one.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Everyone love everybody. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Corey. Thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Benny.
Peace.